Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. In this hour, we'll start off with an open discussion of issues in the news and beyond. On this morning's panel, WAMC's Alan Chartok, WAMC newsman Ray Graff, and political consultant Libby Post. Later in the broadcast, Darlene Love's Love for the Holidays concert is on Friday at the Mahawi. Darlene Love will join us later on. We'll get a book show preview with novelist and memoirist Paul Auster. Plus, Alan will be back in the Congressional Corner. We'll talk beer for the holidays and meet the co-author of Broadway's Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, Glenn Berger. The Roundtable begins after news from the BBC and WAMC Regional News. Good morning and welcome to our Roundtable panel for this Monday, the 25th. Thank you, Ray. 25th of November. I appreciate your help.
Yeah. Ho, ho, ho. A month to go.
We welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. I was, you become confused as far as day and time, but yesterday I was watching. Did you see were you watching the Giants game yesterday?
Occasionally.
Did you have to bring it up?
No. No, not the game itself, but did you see the Channel 10 faux pas?
I did. Yes, that they had given incorrect weather information.
Yeah. During halftime, it's all very confusing because it's on Fox 23, but they're now run Channel 10 News. So they did the news break, the halftime news break, but it was from like a month and a half ago.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And they were saying, "Oh my God, a beautiful day today." I'm thinking, "Beautiful day. It's so cold." And they're like, "And it's gonna go down to 50 tonight. Tomorrow it'll be 70. It'll be great." And then after that, they just kept on telling you that.
Wasn't
guys. True. It was actually there's frigid freeze warnings in effect, and
it was
very funny. So, good morning, all. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan,
and good morning to you, Joe. I like your Monday shirt. It's always very colorful.
Thank you very much. Ray Graff is with us, and our wonderful political consultant Libby Post joins us.
Thank you, darling.
It is wonderful to see you.
It's great to see
always.
You too.
All right, and in full disclosure, I have new glasses, and I'm trying to get used to the bifocals.
Oh, congratulations.
So the things that used to be clear are no longer as clear, so if I mispronounce words or your names, I apologize. Let us begin with what is happening in Iran and this major announcement, so major that the president came out to speak about it on Saturday night. When does that happen? And the Obama administration's successful push for an accord that would temporarily freeze much of Iran's nuclear program has cast a spotlight on the more formidable challenge it now confronts in trying to roll the program back. For all of the drama of late-night make-or-break talks in Geneva, the deal that the Secretary of State John Kerry and his negotiating partners announced early on Sunday was largely a holding action meant to keep the Iranian nuclear program in check for 6 months while negotiators pursue a far tougher and more lasting agreement. So this is one of those things that was being worked on. I don't know how many people thought it would come to fruition. It has, at least, as we say, a holding action. So now we hope for the best, I assume.
Well, Joe, this thing reminds me of what Congress has been doing. They say, okay, they push things forward. So CR, or continuing resolution, means that we're not coming out with a bill. We're just going to say, hold things as they are. But look, this thing is fraught with danger. Our relationships with Israel are tentative right now. Saudi Arabia, as much as I, don't like the fact that they're a country that doesn't allow women to drive and other things, it's not good because they say that we've cut the rug out from under them, that we didn't consult anybody. The big problem with this is that nobody really knows what it is. We don't know. There are lots of, as Woodrow Wilson would have put it, pardon me, Libby, because I know you're reading on him now, secret agreements secretly arrived at. And we don't know what the codicils are. And we don't know. But we know one thing, and that is that one of the reasons that the Iranians came around on this is because they knew that they were in real trouble in terms of their own economy and because of all of the things that, the nations of the world had put on their shoulders by saying no. Now, once you let them up, they're up. And I suspect that a lot of the countries that are in that coalition putting the sanctions on are not going to go along with it again. And that's something we should think about.
Does anybody else want to? One of the things I just want to add is the Secretary of State, John Kerry, was on not one, not two, but three Sunday morning shows yesterday, and saying that the deal signed early Sunday morning in Geneva would lock in place nuclear activities that bring Iran closer to having a bomb and subject its nuclear facilities to unprecedented international inspections. And he was really defending the interim nuclear agreement with Iran and rejecting comparisons to North Korea and insisting that the deal would make Israel and the Persian Gulf allies of the United States more secure. And, of course, the rub on that is what the critics are saying, is that it will make them less secure.
Yeah.
Well, it certainly is what Netanyahu is saying.
Yeah.
Yes, it certainly is. But I think he would say that regardless of whatever they came.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think, you know.
It's never good enough.
It's never good enough for. I know this is a little weird.
Yeah.
It's never good enough for him. It just seems like more of the same, because they're still going to have the ability to build the bomb, but people are going to watch more. I mean, what's interesting to me is that Iran is actually engaging in this, and I think it's exactly what Alan said. It's about money. You know, Ahmadinejad destroyed their economy. If they want to be any kind of player in the world, they have to have a stronger economy. And, you know, I want to see, while I don't agree with Netanyahu, his hawkish politics all the time, I do think we need to make sure that whatever comes out of this, that Israel is secure and is not going to become a nuclear target. Because, see, my thing is this. Anybody bombs Israel, that's the end of the entire Middle East, because they will bomb everybody else. It'll be a total wipeout,
and
we'll be in World War III.
The Americans might join them.
Yes, I think so too. And I think that, you know, this notion that this weakens U.S.-Israeli relations is hyperbole, because we're Israel's best friend. I mean, and we will continue to be, just because of the geopolitics here. But we also all have to learn to live in this world, in a peaceful, hopefully a peaceful world.
I couldn't have put it better.
Oh, thank you. You know, I was struck with all the Kennedy stuff, about how much he talked about peace all the time.
Yeah.
And it sort of resonates. Well, it definitely resonates today.
When you look at the situation of those who are saying, you know, we should have taken a harder line and we should have, I mean, this is a situation where it was hard enough just to come to this baby step.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you do that harder? Why, you know, don't you have to take it slow?
Well, you know, I think everybody would have preferred that we had a moment when Iran said, we're getting rid of all of our nukes and we're not going to do this anymore. And you had much of what you had in the old Soviet Union when Reagan said, take down the wall. And they took down the wall,
right.
You know, and you got a real deal. It's interesting because I've been watching most of the night the people on the television saying, the Iranians saying, good, this is great because it helped us preserve our nuclear program. Then you have John Kerry saying, no, it didn't. We're not doing it. Then you had the Iranian foreign minister saying, yeah, no, we did. It's not explicit, but it's understood. We're going to be able to do what we're doing now. So when I said in the beginning, I don't really know what was agreed upon, I still don't.
Well, Secretary of State Kerry has acknowledged that Israel, Saudi Arabia, and other countries in the region had a right to be skeptical of Iran's intentions, but he said that the United States and its negotiating partners had taken steps to address that by insisting on strict monitoring and verifications. He said on the CBS program, I thought this was interesting, he said this on Face the Nation, you don't trust. It's not based on trust. It's based on verification. It's based on your ability to know what is happening. And I think I guess that's where people are skeptical of how do you actually know what's happening.
Well, we don't. I mean, knowing what's happening is a part of the deal, no question about it. But more important is knowing what's in the agreement.
Well, yes.
You know, I mean, how can you know whether we're holding them to it if you don't know what they've agreed on?
Why don't we know more about this stuff? We seem to have been saying that over the last couple of weeks on so many different issues, of whether it be healthcare, whether it be about the deal on even immigration. It's really, well, we don't know. why don't we know?
Because it's not convenient for the political actors to have us know.
Yeah.
And it's much easier for them to come to agreements, which we don't know about, so they can get away with it.
And it doesn't sell newspapers. I'm sorry. You know, people like us are far and few between, and the newspapers that, you know, the headlines, it's not what sells. I mean, it's, you know, and people aren't interested necessarily in the minutiae of it all. They want to know they're safe, and that's it. And so if the headline says, "You're safe, Iran deal on," then they'll feel happy, because then they don't have to think about it anymore. I mean, not the people who listen to this station. I'm not talking about the people who listen here, but the majority of people just want to know that they're safe. And, you know, then there's the other part of it, that no matter what you do, they're going to say you're lying, and that's all there is to it. But a lot of it has to do with what's going to sell advertising space, and what's going to sell ads during the morning shows, and how many people are going to tune in for all of this. And you need to be able to negotiate some of this stuff confidentially in order to be able to come up with a decent decision. My bright spot in this is that Iran's at the table. That's a new thing. They didn't want to be at the table for so long.
Well, interestingly, apparently they've been at the table for quite a while now, and nobody knew about it. And they've been meeting in, you know, wherever. And they've been thrashing all of this stuff out. I was struck, by the way, I got criticized the other day for being tangential, but I thought I'd just mention this. I was struck by the fact that the nuclear option, which I'm sure we're going to talk about.
We will.
Had it been in place the way that it is now, then Susan Rice would be the Secretary of State right now.
Right.
I presume that she would have gotten the necessary Democratic votes. And the question is, would she have done better at this than John Kerry has? I know that Kerry is really thinking this is vindication, you know, of his work. And I think Obama needed a win.
Yes, absolutely. So however they're going to frame it, it's going to be framed as a win.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Unison Art Center, New Paltz, a Sunday salon presentation of cellist Alice Yu and violinist Michelle Ross for an afternoon of music and conversation. Sunday, December 8th at 2, unisonarts.org. Harry King, Rug and Home, East Hampton, Massachusetts, offering antique reproduction, modern and tribal area rugs made from vegetable dyes, rug cleaning and repair, harryking.com. And The Odyssey Bookshop, South Hadley, Massachusetts. Wally Lamb will sign and discuss his latest novel, We Are Water, Tuesday, December 3rd at 7 p.m. OdysseyBKS.com for details.
Last week, we were talking an awful lot about the possibility of the nuclear option. And then late last week, Senate Democrats invoked the nuclear option. And that is ultimately, as a commentary in the Washington Post puts it, immediately did one thing, made the president and future ones much more powerful. First of all, do you buy that, Alan, that it makes the president more popular?
Without question.
Yeah.
Without question. I mean, you know, he can name his people to the courts. He can name his people to his to the strategic situations, like Susan Rice would have been nominated. And, of course, it's also true that if a Republican becomes president, he gets the Senate. he'll be more powerful, or she'll be more powerful, too.
So explain a little bit about why we even call it a nuclear option. We called that because it can go and work against the Democrats as well and have a complete meltdown. So what guarantee do we have that that's not going to happen?
We have no guarantees. And the fact is that if you want to have a democracy or anything resembling it, it makes sense to do it this way and to take whatever comes along. But don't think that this won't play a big part in our discourse during an election, because people are going to talk about this. Candidates are going to say to the Democrats in the United States, who outnumber the Republicans, remember, if you don't elect a if you don't elect a Democratic Senate and a Democratic president, you're going to be faced with the nuclear option working against you. Now, I think the word nuclear is fascinating, but I leave that to my colleague Libby, who has some thoughts on this.
Well, I just think it's a weird way of putting it. You know, to me, this is, you know, when you look at this from a global perspective, it's governing out of total fear. Oh, if we do this, then the Republicans will be able to do it. If we do this, then the Democrats will be able to do it. What about the people? You know, it's like we have to stop governing out of fear of what will happen because the party that we want is not in favor, but start governing like we're supposed to govern and represent the people. And so, you know, yeah, the thing is this. When the Republicans were in, you know, the amount of filibustering around appointments was nil compared to what it's been with Obama.
No, it was there, but it wasn't there.
Not like it is now.
I would just add something to what you're saying, which is that the GOP, if you compare the damage that was done to either, the GOP is winning. So if I'm the fly on the wall sitting there listening to the debate that the Senate Democrats must have been talking with each other, and of course with Obama's people on the telephone with them, they must have been saying, hey, what do we got to lose? Every time they're in office, they get their people, or most of them, and everyone, anyway, we're in office, we
right.
don't.
Right.
And they're
right.
coming after us in a way they never have before.
I was fascinated, and I apologize for bringing this up, but I'm just fascinated by it, so I want to
go ahead.
I want to enter it into the conversation, and I try not to bring Rush Limbaugh up an awful lot, not because of anything about Rush, it's just because it's such a lightning rod. But so he got on radio on Friday and said that this was a step towards total status authoritarianism. He went on to say that he believed that not only that, but he even compared filibuster reform to a vote that would allow women to be raped. What is important to note here, and I think is interesting, is that in 2004, while discussing the Democratic minority's filibusters of President Bush's lower court judicial nominees, he then called the nuclear option the constitutional option, encouraging Republicans to take it as the only.
Oh, yeah.
So my question, a long way of asking the question of, aren't we always going to have this fight depending on who's where?
Yes.
Well, that's right. You will. But remember that both sides always call for up or down votes. They always say, let's just give this thing a chance, up or down. Don't stand in the way with the filibuster. I think two of the terrible things that have existed to pervert American democracy have been the gerrymander, creating, you know, rotten districts, basically, where depending on how you draw them, you win or lose, and the filibuster. And really, yes, it will empower the president, and in this case, it's a very good thing. I may not be saying the same thing if the Republicans take both the Senate and the presidency, but, you know, this guy's hands have been tied. And why would you elect a president and everybody has such great hopes for him, and then he can't do anything because he can't get the necessary votes?
We're new. Anything you want to add to that?
Just that, you know, Limbaugh is so clearly off the wall and partisan. When it's good for him, he loves it. When it's not good for him politically, he hates it.
Why I was hesitant to bring it up, because I know it's just a lightning rod. But I bring it up because it illustrates the fact that goes back and forth like a tennis.
It illustrates the facts of how duplicitous they are. That's all it illustrates the facts of.
Who's the they in this case?
Well,
both political parties.
Well, no, not necessarily, but think Limbaugh and the Republicans, you know, if there was a Republican in office and there was this try to do this and they did this,
they'd be talking about the nuclear option. Sure.
They would be absolutely thrilled.
Sure.
If there was a Republican president in office and they only had to get, you know, I mean, the other problem part of this is you know, we live in a democracy. 50% plus one. I mean, you know, do we have to have a supermajority for everything that we do? And that's what they asked for, to stop a filibuster. So let's just do what needs to be done and not necessarily always play politics, but although they're politicians, with every decision that we make. And that's, I mean, everything, everything. And for him to say it's women are going to be raped or compare it to that is just another example of how out of touch and unrealistic this man is.
I don't agree with you. I think he is in touch. I think he's doing what his masters want him to. And the more red meat he throws, the more the tigers growl. And they basically, he knows exactly what he's doing, but that doesn't make him anything but irresponsible.
Yeah.
Because in terms of what it does to the political process, it ain't good.
We are going to take a break, go to NPR News. When we come back, we will continue with other important subjects. We welcome your input as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable discussion. We have a terrific panel before us. Dr. Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe.
And Ray Graff is here. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
You said that, yes, you're almost as enthusiastic as Alan. And Libby Post joins us. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Joe and Alan and Ray.
It is a delight to have you with us. Rosemary is out today, but she'll be back tomorrow, so we are happy about that. I read a cool article last night by John Blake of CNN that is titled, Of Course Presidents Lie. And I thought we could talk a little bit about lying and lying. Presidents. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell a lie. We all know that story, right? True. I cannot tell a lie. I did not chop down that cherry tree. Okay, George Washington. What is it about presidents and lying? And presidential lying is a hot topic because of a promise made by President Obama while promoting the Health Care Act. The president told Americans that they could keep their health insurance if they wanted to. That turned out to be not true for some, and the president has been accused of lying. Some political pundits warn that Obama's quote-unquote lie will undo his second term. They say Americans won't forgive a president who violates their trust. Cool. It's a good soundbite, but it's bad history. A great leader, this article says, a great leader must be a great pretender and dissembler, Machiavelli said in The Prince, and so should a president, according to many historians. You might say that lying is the verbal lubricant that keeps the Oval Office
like
engine
it.
Running.
FDR, I will not put American boys across the waters. That was a good one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Read my lips.
Right, read my lips. That's
and
right.
That didn't happen.
It is what it is.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
It's all according to what is.
But right.
Let's discuss what a lie is just for a moment. Is a lie something that is not true, or is a lie something that you thought? That in other words, you have to know that it was a lie in order for it to be a lie.
So intent is the key.
You are always so bright when you chip.
I see.
Chip in.
Right, well,
do what
you tell me what the answer is.
I think it is. I think you have to know that what you are doing is a lie in order for it to qualify as a lie. Otherwise, I think it's an untruth. Now, I have been one of the few who have believed in this Affordable Health Care Act that some dunce in the White House assured the president that this was true. And the president went and said it. Why in the world would a president who knows if you get caught on anything, you'll be sort of crucified.
Well, let's look at when he said it. He said it when he was running for the second term.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, maybe he doesn't say that, and maybe he doesn't get reelected. I mean, he said it on the campaign trail, and I think that's why some people are upset about the quote-unquote lie. Whether he believed it or not is certainly another question.
I see, and I know Libby has something to say about what you've just said, Ray.
Well, I just found it interesting that We're okay. So you say something while you're in office, and that's the quality of that is different than when you say something when you're on the campaign trail.
It's absolutely.
And people, it's but people, I think, expect you more to lie when you're on the campaign trail. I'm not sure, you know, about that. I think that if you don't know what you're saying is a lie when you say it, it's not a lie, because it's not something you are consciously saying to yourself, oh, I know this is wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway. And we all do that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I don't think...
So it's the George Costanza. It's not a lie if you believe it.
No, well, if it's... Yes, if okay. you believe well what you're saying...
Well-known political philosopher, George
right,
Costanza.
Right, right, right. But I do think Alan is right about this, that I do think that the president was told, sure, this is what's going to happen. And we have this expectation of all of our elected officials that they're going to know every single thing that they need to know, and they're always going to get it right, and that's just not going to happen. And we listen to our advisors, we listen to the experts in the field, and we have to take their word for it. And I think that he's gotten caught up in this, and I think in the long run, I hate to say this, I think in the long run it's going to be a blip, it's going to be a pimple on his presidency.
Well, I agree with that, but I also think that you know, it is the job of the opposing team to try to make the point that you're a liar,
right?
Or,
right.
as the saying goes, a lying liar.
Right. I mean, and the opposing... that what's happening is now is that the opposing team uses lies as truth. And they put out their lies as absolute gospel truth. And so...
Could I have an example?
Yeah. Junk science. Okay?
That's an example.
In other words, the atmosphere
right.
has not gone to hell.
Right, right.
Well,
and God created the world, and having to teach creationism in
school. So you're saying all those in the Republican Party believe both those things?
Most of them do. If you go and look at the congressmen and the people who are elected, maybe not you, but the people
who
are elected.
Hey, don't bring me into this.
Okay. Well, you just did.
Well, you just
I'm saying that you're making a broad generalization.
Yes. I am making a broad generalization because that's how they have been projecting themselves. I mean, they are really, I mean, when you let the Michelle Bachmans of the world be your spokesperson.
Or Rush Limbaugh.
Not an elected official, but an entertainer.
So?
Right?
No. I wouldn't call him an entertainer.
Oh, I would.
You're not going
to call
him.
For a baseball.
So then are you an entertainer?
Yes, I think. Well, I mean,
at times, certainly.
Obviously, there is a responsibility, but certainly that program has its label of what it is, and as Alan said, they know exactly what they're doing, and their mission statement they fulfill that each and every day.
Okay. But they're opinion leaders. That's
right,
the point.
Right,
they are
right.
opinion
that's
leaders,
the,
and that in politics is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is. I mean, I would never say even suggest that they don't have a responsibility to be accurate.
Really?
Say that again.
A responsibility to be accurate.
You think they have a responsibility?
I do.
They do, but they don't think they do.
I think they do. I agree that they do, but I don't see this any different than, say, Rachel Maddow and MSNBC.
So, two rights, two wrongs.
No, I know. I'm just saying that we have it on both sides, which I think is Ray's point. The other thing, too, is that, or maybe that wasn't Ray's point. I apologize.
You're on a roll. Keep going.
Ray, make a point, and I'll agree with it. But the other thing, too, is when you think about this idea of lying, and isn't it an easy out, though, to say, okay, I have this health care plan, and I'm going to sell this to the American people, and this is what it is, and this is what it is, and this is what it is. And then one of the main tenets of it turns out not to be right, turns out to not to be true, and it's an easy thing to say, okay, well, I was misled. That seems like an easy out. There's more responsibility attached to it than that.
By the way,
there?
I don't remember him saying I was misled, which is interesting. I think he was misled. Yeah, but I think somebody came.
Well,
to
he
him.
Had said early in the process that he did not know that had changed, and was not aware of that. From according to that Washington Post article, I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
But when they did the rundown of how it was faltering, that was one of the things included in that.
Silence the crowd.
Well, yeah. Yeah, well, there's that.
Well, I mean, but let's go back to the lying thing. I mean, you know, it's...
So when Bill Clinton says, I didn't have sex with that woman.
Well, that's the biggest gift he's given to our children, because what it says is oral sex isn't sex, and that's the problem.
That's
and
right.
I don't know if I should have been on a 7-second delay there or not.
No.
But
no,
I can tell
was,
you.
It was clinical.
I can tell you that when you walk into a middle school these days.
As long as you don't have Rob Ford writing here. Right. I think you're okay.
Yeah. If you walk into a middle school these days, they don't think oral sex is the same as intercourse. And it's a real issue.
Yeah, but sexual relations.
Again, that's a broad generalization,
one. I'm sorry, Ray, but I lived through this with my son. When he went into middle school and the stories he would come home, and it was, you know, he was in middle school in the late 90s, and this was the gift.
That's one kid, though, right?
No, not one kid.
But okay.
I'm sorry.
But let's assume that people compartmentalize in order to lie.
And that's what they do.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he did.
They make sub issues out of it. So sex is one thing, because we now define this, they're saying, as intercourse, as opposed to, you know, but clearly they're making it up as they go along.
Who is?
The people who want to practice it. And who are saying it's okay because.
Well, also,
I don't know.
Don't we get into the difference between a covering up and not? I mean, if you say, okay, well, I didn't do this, and then it turns out, well, okay, you did. We caught you with your hand in the cookie jar. Okay, that's one example. You go back to George Bush Sr. and saying, read my lips, no new taxes. Mm-hmm. And you could say, okay, well, is that a lie? Yes, he ended up raising taxes, but...
But that was a political reality.
And did he know it at the time?
But did he know it at the time? And he said no, and then it turned out when he got there and he saw everything, he realized that he had to.
And that was the end for him?
Is that a lie? You know, and I don't know. To me, there's differentiation between that.
But, you know, Ray just said something that I think is germane to the... To the argument here, he said, and that was the end for him.
Right.
Now, who gets held responsible for a lie in the American polity? That is interesting, that some people escape it and some people don't. Bill Clinton had to stand in the well of the House and face impeachment charges and did it with equanimity and retires as the most popular president in the history of the United States, including Ronald Reagan, by the way. And so, who do we hold responsible for telling a lie? Jimmy Carter? I don't even remember what his lie was.
I have lust in my heart.
That wasn't a lie.
But that wasn't a lie. That was an admission.
That was the truth.
And then there was that weird killer rabbit
story. No, his problem was he didn't... His problem is that he didn't lie.
Yeah, right. Probably.
All he had to do when they said, do you have lust in your heart?
No.
Right.
That would have been a lie.
Right.
Move on.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean.
So Eric writes us from Rhinebeck and says, the president knew that plans like my high deductible plan would not qualify under ACA, so he had to know it would be canceled.
Okay.
So how do you tell Eric he wasn't lying?
Well, wouldn't you rather have a low deductible plan that you can get on the health exchange rather than a high deductible plan? I mean, let's be real.
Well, I'm going to confess to you guys that people will say to me every once in a while, what's on at 9 o'clock at night?
And you don't know?
Right.
And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
so
no,
I
don't.
Say, I don't know. So I say, so is that a lie? I don't know. It's a little bit.
You're not saying anything.
You just
don't want to admit
that you don't know.
Right.
That's different.
Well, because sometimes the cover is, I believe it's one of our music programs.
Mm-hmm. That's a cover.
Yeah, that's a cover.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, let's talk about corporations.
All right, we'll do that in just a second. We're going to take a break first. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break. Having a spirited conversation during the break.
And here's the thing that I want to remind everybody, that here in front of me is a sign. It said, guests be advised that video, underlined, of all live broadcasts from this studio is streamed online at WMC.org.
Read my lips.
That's my point. There are lip readers out there.
Do they get, but they don't get audio, just video?
No, just video.
If they can read lips, then it was a very entertaining
Well, I'm facing you.
As we were going, just so everybody will understand what's happening here. As we were going in away from the break, the music was playing out.
Right.
Libby decided she had to make a point, and she said something to us, but she said it. It was a little risque. And she said it,
Sotto voce.
Sotto voce.
All right. Well, let's move on.
Nobody heard it.
Yeah. Why should we move on?
Well, it's inside baseball. We have 9 minutes of excitement to fill.
But let me explain myself. I was trying, Ray, and I know how critical you can be.
I am.
Of me. But the reason I said it is I was trying to get more people to watch it.
Oh.
Get
the whole thing. Oh, okay.
See? Okay, all right, here's one for you, viewers.
Hey, we all have faces made for radio, and that is the problem.
Indeed.
Cut it out.
Oh, there you go, Ray.
That's a little value added for the video listeners, video watchers.
And where can you get video? Where do you
go to WMC.org?
Oh, it's a live feed. Okay,
yeah,
great.
There you
well,
go.
It's almost live. It's about 7 seconds delay.
I will reiterate again that we all have faces. Is made for radio, so
yes, yeah, absolutely.
Except you, Alan.
Three of you do.
Oh, he's dirty.
All right, so let us talk.
At least you shaved your beard off.
Quickly, letters, and then we'll get on to our final topic of the day. So the partisanship on your treatment of the nuclear option in the Senate is breathtaking. I expect Alan to be highly partisan, but I usually hope that more reasoned individuals would provide some balance, as Mike Newpaltz. To assert that it is only Republicans that are duplicitous on this issue is to ignore reality.
And by the way, I never said that. I love it when people call and project words into your mouths that they wish you were saying.
I think that was my point, was that this is both sides doing this, right?
Of course.
But, okay. Thank you, Mike. We appreciate that. Then we go on to...
We appreciate the cheap shot.
Will... Alan, you asked them to write, they write.
No, it wasn't a cheap shot. He made a valid point.
Wolfgang says what Obama accomplished with his agreement with Iran is to reduce the threat, I believe, that Israel will attack their nuclear facilities anytime soon. He has thus reduced the price of crude oil futures, which should keep the price of heating oil down. This will help New England homeowners, especially those of us who lived on fixed incomes, to make it through the winter financially, and it does help.
Yeah, that's good. And I noticed today that the Lumberg report that we were reading about this morning said gas prices are up 3 cents a gallon. So that's very interesting that $2 to buy the stuff crude and 3 cents more from the gas companies.
Jim, yes. Yes.
And $1.50 from the state.
But don't you think that's a brilliant insight?
Yes.
Yeah, oh yeah. Hmm.
Yes. I have to say that Jim brings up a great point, which we did not mention, which is no one mentioned the biggest lie of all, WMDs.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And we did not mention
we that. Forgot
and
about
you
that.
Are,
but
you
it's
are,
a good point.
Yes.
It's a very good point. And let's see. And then finally, Teresa says, there is a grandfather clause in the ACA that was supposed to take care of the subpar policies that have been canceled such that the insurance companies could have kept some of these policies going. The insurance companies had the option of doing this unless they made changes to the policies between the time the law was enacted and January 1st, 2014. Most chose to make changes and thus not grandfather the policies. That's still true, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. However, shouldn't they have known that was a possibility before you say that you can't? That it won't be changed.
Yes, I
which
hear,
is still,
I hear both
still
of you.
The still the issue, but I certainly understand the point, Teresa. Thank you very much. Now, let's go on to our final issue for this morning, and that is this article was sent to me by one Ray Graff. It is a fascinating look, and darn it.
You lost it?
What a strange
I got hard copy.
Do you have it? Because
here you go.
I can't. I'm not sure. I'm not allowed
name.
To. What?
What do you mean?
Well, because we have you here, Ray Graff.
Yeah.
And Joe just said an article was sent to us by one Ray Graff. You know, one is a strange first name.
Oh, I see.
By one
yes,
Ray
it's
Graff.
A relative.
Yes.
Just
one
a relative.
Comma.
Thank you. I'm unable to get into this because they've told me I've used up my free article. So
I
don't have to.
Really such a pain.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy.
Hello, LA Times. Anyway, right. Corporations are increasingly spying on nonprofit groups that they view as potential threats with little fear of retribution, according to a new report by a corporate watchdog group. The large companies employ former CIA, National Security Agency, FBI, military, and police officers to monitor, in some cases, infiltrate groups that have been critical of them, according to the report by Essential Information, which was founded by Ralph Nader in the 1980s. Many different types of nonprofits have been targeted with espionage, including environmental, anti-war, public interest, consumer, food safety, pesticide reform, nursing home reform, gun control, social justice, animal rights, and armed control groups.
Okay, so there are four of us in the room.
Yeah.
Which of us is the infiltrator?
You.
Yeah, I mean, it's well known.
You're the corporate tool here.
We've been infiltrated by the Red Chinese for years, and I think that's on you there.
I'm the lavender menace.
Gotcha.
So the question is, I think this isn't really all that hard to believe, no. I don't think.
Well, you go back to Hoover. And you saw him infiltrating anybody he didn't
like.
Right. Martin Luther King, you know, anybody else.
But this would not be governmental, but ex-government in you know.
This is one more step to fascism. That's what this is.
Yeah. You were going to say something, right?
No.
Oh.
Just going to say this was not actually, in other words, Hoover was at least under the umbrella of government,
he was.
Even though he did some things that were not necessarily
right. And to what and what is this stuff being used for?
Do good we know question. That? No.
Well, to ultimately
find the companies.
To find their weak spots. So if you are a company that is going against and working against a corporation, then they can spy on you, infiltrate you, and then in some way cut you down at the knees to lessen your impact.
Shocked.
I mean, right, to find shocked out gambling.
Gambling's
right.
Going on.
I just watched that the other day. But the thing is that more and more corporations are running government. I mean, corporations are people now, according to the U.S. Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And the ties between government and corporations are very close. And this is just one more step to corporations and big business running our day-to-day lives in a way that we speak out and they're going to come after us and undermine the organizations that we work for. I mean, these not-for-profits, these advocacy groups, I'm involved with many, you know, keep democracy alive and keep the debates going. And when this kind of stuff happens, I expected it from Hoover and the FBI, you know, but when this, and I expect them to spy on each other. The corporations, you know, corporate espionage.
Sure.
But to be so threatened.
Well, wait a second, Libby. Think about this for a second. Do you ever hear the word fink?
Yes.
Well, you know, they were always finding finks to come into the labor unions and infiltrate them so that the other side. What?
No, I've never heard this. No.
Oh,
never
sure.
Heard? No.
You've
fink?
You've never heard of finks?
Yeah. No.
Well, finks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, you get somebody who come in and infiltrate the labor union so you know what they were going to do and what their next moves were going to be. That's the way it was.
We had people infiltrating the student government stuff, the student politics stuff.
Is that right?
Did they actually call them finks?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Wow, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
There was a...
I'll be darned, said Ray.
What?
I love it when Ray says, I'll be darned.
I'll be darned. I thought you were going to say...
Idiom
I love when Ray says, oh, look at the time. We're all done. And indeed we are. My thanks to everyone who wrote and commented, and we love getting your notes. And you can still write to us, roundtable@wamc.org. We will assemble this group again tomorrow and talk about other topics in the news. Thank you all for being with us. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. And coming up, the roundtable will continue on WAMC.